Nothing in all creation can separate us from the love of God. Nothing in all creation can separate us from the love of God. Nothing in all creation can separate us from the love of God. Nothing in all creation can separate us from the love of God.
Now Jesus was led up by the Spirit into the wilderness to be tempted by the devil. And he fasted for 40 days and 40 nights. And afterwards, he was famished. This is the gospel of the Lord. Praise to you, O Christ. Into the wilderness. Jesus is led up by the Spirit into the wilderness to be tempted by the devil. You might be asking what one of our Bible studiers this last Wednesday during our Lenten noon Bible study asked. What is going on here? I really don't understand any of it. Why does Jesus have to be tempted? What's going on here in this wilderness? Why does the Spirit, the Holy Spirit of God, which has just blessed this man, just given him this good news that he is the beloved Son of God in his baptism in the waters under John's hand, why does that same Spirit now lead him out into the desert to be tempted, to face the devil, to fast, and be hungry, even famished? Maybe you asked that question as you walked in to church this morning. What is going on here? They've got parts of the church blocked off. The pastor's wearing fuzzy slippers and pajama pants. What is going on? Maybe it's appropriate that today was the day that our children's ministry director decided it would be pajama day and invite the kids and maybe a pastor or two to wear pajamas. It's mixing it up a little bit. The rules don't apply. It is Lent in this wilderness time, and it turns out that there's something about Lent that things get changed, or maybe they could be. Where the rules don't always apply. Yes, this divine Spirit of God leads Jesus out into the desert, out into the wilderness, leading Jesus in his humanity to experience one of the great and terrible things about being human: being free. In the wilderness, Jesus faces freedom and danger. And liminality. Liminality is this fancy scholarly word that describes that place in between. The limen is that threshold before you're inside the house, but also before you're outside, after you're outside. It's kind of that in between. It's you're not what you used to be. You're not yet what you are becoming. You are just this mess right now. It's the cocoon and the goo that the butterfly is before they are a butterfly and after they are a caterpillar. The liminality, that liminal moment, is that in between. It's a moment that happens in the wilderness. Maybe you've seen the movie or the musical Into the Woods. It describes a number of our European fairy tales, Red Riding Hood and Jack and the Beanstalk and Cinderella and Rapunzel and the baker and his wife, all sort of going on their journeys into the woods. And they sing in that musical, "Into the woods, who can tell what's waiting on the journey?" In the woods is a place of mystery, of magic, of possibility. They sing, "Into the woods without delay, be careful not to lose the way. Into the woods, who knows what may be lurking on the journey. Into the woods to get the thing that makes it worth the journeying. Into the woods." They all go into the woods, into the margins of society, outside the town, outside the castle, where the rules no longer apply. In Lent, we enter into our own wilderness. Between the remembrance of our death on Ash Wednesday, where we remember that we are dust and to dust we shall return, and the remembrance of the death of God on Good Friday, between death and death, anything can happen. The singers sing, "Anything can happen in the woods." And if you know that musical, you know the stories don't always end up with happy endings. Any moment we could be crushed. Foolishness can happen in the woods. Right and wrong don't matter in the woods. Out in the desert, there is a gift of freedom. Jesus, in that freedom, though, faces the temptations of the devil. I'm going to let Pastor Pear get into that. But in that moment, Jesus is free. And in this moment, this spiritual moment of Lent, so are we. It's the freedom that is always ours, that is always at hand, though we don't always recognize it. It's that freedom that we are indeed unchained from our past. That what we have been isn't necessarily what we could be. That the mistakes that line our ways in the past need not define our future, nor will the successes of our past always carry us forward into the future unharmed if we are not aware. There's always the possibility and the terror of our freedom, that at a moment anything can change. Maybe it changes for the worse. But maybe it also changes for the better. For every day might be the day that the alcoholic or the addict might wake up, and that will be their first day of sobriety. Any day might be the day that the broken relationships need not remain broken anymore, but may begin to be repaired with a single conversation or brave phone call. Every day might be the day where the spiritually worn out and empty, those wandering in spiritual deserts, might find nourishment in the broken land of the wilderness. In this Lenten season, I invite you into the possibility, into the liminality that Jesus enters into.
God is kind and gracious, God heals the broken spirit. God is kind and gracious, God heals the broken spirit. Blessed is the one whose sin is forgiven, and whose wrongs are put away. Happy is the one free of guilt, whose spirit is pure, whose words are the truth. God is kind and gracious, God heals the broken spirit. Confess all my sin, my body wasted away. Day and night my sins were before me, my strength dried up like the summer's heat. declared my sin to the Lord, and my heavy guilt I confessed. God, forgive all my transgressions, my sin and guilt were taken away. God is kind and gracious, God heals the broken spirit. When the faithful have floods rushing down, the same floods are beyond their reach, the Lord will be their hiding place. Salvation's joy shall be their song. God is kind and gracious, God heals the broken spirit.
More of the Gospel of Matthew. The tempter came and said to Jesus, "If you are the Son of God, command these stones to become loaves of bread." But he answered, "It is written, one does not live by bread alone, but by every word that comes from the mouth of God." Then the devil took Jesus to the holy city, Jerusalem, and placed him on the pinnacle of the temple and said to him, "If you are the Son of God, throw yourself down. For it is written, God will command God's angels concerning you, and on their hands they will bear you up so that you will not dash your foot against a stone." Jesus said to him, "Again, it is written, do not put the Lord your God to the test." Again, the devil took Jesus to a very high mountain and showed him all the kingdoms of the world and their glory. And he said to him, "All these I will give to you if you fall down and worship me." Then Jesus said to him, "Away with you, Satan. For it is written, worship the Lord your God and serve only him." And then the devil left Jesus, and suddenly angels came and waited on him. The Gospel of the Lord. Praise to you, O Christ. What are these temptations? For many, the season of Lent becomes synonymous with temptations, either avoiding them, temporarily abstaining from them, caving or giving in to them, feeling guilty about caving or giving in to them. The devil comes to Jesus in the wilderness just as the serpent comes to Eve with some pretty solid and compelling arguments. I mean, say what you will about this serpent, Satan, devil, tempter figure. He's pretty slick and has some pretty interesting ideas, tantalizing ideas even. These arguments on their own make pretty good sense. You're hungry and powerful. Turn these rocks into bread. Eat. What are you, crazy? Come on. You are faithful and highly valued. Prove God's love for you. Jump. You are building a movement and seeking to bring people along. Pledge your allegiance to me.
and look at all I will give to you. These arguments are compelling, especially because Jesus is hungry. Jesus is out in that wilderness by himself, starving, in fact, 40 days without anything to eat. 40 days in this wilderness, in this maybe exciting but also weird and almost terrifying place, this unknown, unusual, unexplored place where the rules are gone. These are compelling arguments. Who could blame Jesus for saying, you know, bread, that does sound pretty good. You know? Put my God to the test, show that God cares for me. Sure, I know God cares for me. I can show it to you. Watch. God, power, control, all of this for me? Sure, okay. Who could blame him? And who could blame us? Now, how many of you have been swept by the devil up to the top of the IDS to survey the grand kingdoms of Minneapolis and St. Paul? None of us, right? No. How many of us have been swept to the top of the temple and shown, said, challenged to jump, to throw our lives literally to the mercy of God? Not many of us. How many of us have been pushed to turn rocks into bread and eat when we are hungry? Doesn't happen for us. But we face these temptations. We face all kinds of temptations. How many times have we seen a commercial or a new product that promises to change our lives for the better? Oh, come on. How many of us have bought it? Right? How many of us have found ourselves in that place of doubt, of trial, of tribulation, and said, God, prove it. Show me in a tangible way this love that you have for me. How many of us have had the opportunity for more power, a little more control? And I'm not talking about over the kingdoms that we survey from the mountaintop, but even just someone else's behavior. How our neighbor takes care of their yard. I felt that way, right? How do we respond even as a church? Jesus is tempted in the wilderness with all of these grand promises, these grand challenges, these questions designed to find fault in his relationship with his God, in his own faithfulness. All the more important, all the more heated, because he is hungry, he is alone, he is cold at night, he is without those things that we need to survive. Jesus was in a desperate place. What state are we in? Now, I might not feel very desperate today, but I don't need to look much further than the news to see how desperate people are. Not simply by their actions, not simply by the rise in gun violence, not simply in the depths, the rise in need for food and other assistance, not simply even in the outbreak of war and other challenges, but also in the rise of calls for help for mental health, the rise in deepening of isolation in our lives. We are desperate. Our people, our community, our world is desperate. What about our church? Numbers are at an all-time low. Giving is down. People's value in the institution of church is eroding faster than we can respond. We're desperate. We need a solution. We need a fix. We need a band. Or no, wait. We need a food truck. Oh, no, wait. We need. There are a lot of opportunities and ideas for things that we could use to respond to this sense of desperation, to bring people back. But the root of how we respond is guided by how Jesus responds in that moment. Our response often is the response of Eve and Adam in that wilderness, in beautiful, wonderful relationship with one another and with God and with the garden. There's a famous song, a favorite of mine, by Joni Mitchell. It was a big hit by Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young, too. But the words go like this. We are stardust, million-year-old carbon. We are golden, caught in the devil's bargain. And we've got to get ourselves back to the garden. We have a longing to return to that space, to that relationship. So when the devil comes to Jesus and the devil says, eat, the devil says, jump, the devil says, take. What does Jesus do? He reminds the devil and himself, reasserts the relationship that Jesus has with his God. His trust in his God and God's trust in him. How do we respond? What's that big word, kids? Relationship. We reassert, remind ourselves in prayer, in thanksgiving, and yes, even in the expression of doubt and fear and question and even challenge. We reassert our relationship with God. And we do it in public. We do it here. I had a woman on my internship whose husband was lying in his hospital bed at home, dying in the last hours of his life. And she said to the pastor I was with, I don't think I can believe right now. I don't know how to find God in this. And the pastor said, then let us do it for you. Let us be the church for you in this time. We need one another. We need one another in times of desperation, in times of seeking, in times of challenge, temptation, and trial. We need one another sometimes to remind ourselves of the relationship God promises us, the relationship God has with us, the relationship God seeks with us. We are made to be in relationship with one another because that is a sure way of understanding the relationship we have with God. That is a sure way of restoring the relationship we so long for. That is the way to get back to the garden. Amen.
Teach